Okay, so the topic is about how to build Eurostack using open source. And the two things are important, Eurostack and open source. So I think we all know the problem by now. The problem is that the world is captive market. Whatever kind of vital internet service product you want to use, online service, it's an oligopoly by companies. There's very little choice. They are always the same companies doing everything, so not even different companies, but the same companies offering everything. And none of them is European. All of them, I mean, most of them are Americans, at least the ones you use in Europe, and some of them are Chinese more than often, but almost no one is European. And this creates a lot of problems. I want to show that it creates a lot of problems, but the problems are different depending on who you are, which stakeholder you are. So whether you're a citizen, whether you're the private sector that has to buy IT services or private sector that has to compete with these people, or whether you're the government. So there are lots of policy issues as well. But I want to show this because it's important to understand that the problems that are caused by digital sovereignty are also problems caused by the lack of choice. And not all the problems have the same solution. So, of course, when this entire thing started to become perceived as a problem, I mean, we started advocating about this 10 years ago, but only in the last 3-4 years, this has really become mainstream. So there has been a conversation somewhere like this. So this is the Brussels European Commission building, but also in Paris, in Berlin, in other places. Everyone started to say, okay, we need to do something. We need digital sovereignty. And so they started to say, we need European software. This, I mean, Eurostack name, which was, I mean, Christina Caffara came up with it. No, the idea of having a full set of European applications that can replace or compete with the American ones. But the problem is that this is the wrong conversation. So this is the conversation that should have happened. So it should be, we actually need European open source software. So the first point I want to make is that it has to be open source. And open source is really important for digital sovereignty. It's an enabler of digital sovereignty because if you took a look at the problems that I listed two slides ago, one of the problems is the lack of transparency. So the problem with the American proprietary platforms is that they are proprietary. We don't know what they do. We don't know which data they keep, they monitor, they send. While if you have open source, you have transparency. You can check what the software is doing. And also, open source is an enabler. It's free. It's free as in free speech and in free beer. So being free as in free beer means that you can start up a company and you don't have to worry about spending money to buy software. And so you can create new companies. You can create cooperation because the standards are open, the code is open. And so another company can just look at your code and start writing extensions or interoperating with your protocol or whatever. So it creates opportunities for learning since you can study the code. So since our problem is that we need to build European know-how when we're in parts where it is still missing, and by having access to the code, we can actually do that. Well, even if the code were European but proprietary, we would not be able to do it. And same thing about vendor lock-in. Of course, there is still some vendor lock-in with open source software, but much less than with proprietary one. And more importantly, I mean, I've been saying this for 10 years. People are starting to realize this. I mean, for 10 years ago, everyone was like, why don't we have a European Google, a European Microsoft? We have to build a very big, super hyperscaler company. But this is not the way Europe works. Europe is really an archipelago of countries, of languages, local markets. We want to have a single digital market, but we have different cultures. So it's not really there yet. And so open source is really fits well with this because it creates this kind of operation, horizontal cooperation. So you can have SMEs in different languages, different parts of Europe, and they can cooperate. And this can create growth everywhere, not just in the biggest countries. So this is why open source is really a good choice for Europe. So the problem is that we now want to buy European. So we know what open source is. There's a definition, there's an organization, the Open Source Initiative, that defines what open source is. There's licenses, we know. The problem is, what is European open source? How do you define European open source? Because, you know, European proprietary software is clear. Because in proprietary software, man, these are the functions, more or less, that you have to have when you make software. And so there's the development of the code, but then there's a lot of other stuff. There's packaging it, releasing it, integrating it, meaning also customizing it for big customers, and writing extensions, and writing more stuff, and then selling it, and supporting it. In proprietary software, this is usually done by the same company. So it's easy. You take a European company, which is doing proprietary software, and this is a European proprietary software. But with open source, the model is different because open source is a cooperation. So all these functions, which might also be different, they are scattered among multiple actors, so it's a cooperation, and they might not all be made even by not be made by companies. A lot of this is done by volunteers, by nonprofits, and so how do you define a European open source, and how do you check? Because of course, being sure that the code is European has security implications, but also has sovereignty implications. So you have to define when is the open source code sovereign enough that you can use it in Europe. So the best case is this. I mean, of course, like OpenExchange. OpenExchange is a company that does Dovecot, does PowerDNS, some very well widely used open source applications. So in this case, of course, we do everything more or less, because in the end we also use libraries, and libraries can be made in the US. So even with this kind of company, there's always something coming from outside of Europe. But at least you have someone that can control the entire process. But when you cannot do this, which is the case for a lot of things, at least I think that the option for European open source is this one. And this is counterintuitive, because people will always think of the people that write the code. That's important. And while it's important, of course, who the developers are, when you have the problem of sovereignty, of being sure that you can control the code and no one can take it away and it cannot be subject to, U.S. president embargoes or whatever, the important part is the final one, the support, the sales. So the fact that you can have the buyer, the user of the software, have a company in Europe to relate with, and the company is the one that has to ensure that all the code is transparent, verified, and can be controlled, and it will not go away if something happens at the geopolitical level. And so the point is really not about who writes the code. The point is, how can we make sure that whatever code we are using, whoever has been doing it, continuing to do it like we do it today as a cooperation of people everywhere in the world, but the European actor that is then providing it to the European market has to be able to ensure that the code will stay there, that it cannot be taken away, that even if the original authors were subject to like embargo or whatever problems, so it was impossible for them to continue cooperating with European actors, then the European company can still keep the code running. And so this is what I think what we need, a sort of digital sovereignty check by developers, by software companies. So if you as a software company want to provide the software in Europe and make sure that it's always available to European customers, then you need to ensure that you know what's in your code. And this is not easy. Not everyone is doing this yet. So people just incorporate libraries, download repos from GitHub and put it into their code. They have no idea who's doing it and whether it will still be there next year. We as developers have to get better at this. We have to have these questions and make sure that we know what's in the code. We know that we can control the code, keep it running. The code will always be available. And by the way, this is now becoming, in general, a legal requirement due to the Cyber Resilience Act. Not for the sovereignty part, but for the security part. So you will have to know what's in your code, and you will have to ensure that it's safe and secure. So even if you pick random code somewhere else, coming from whatever part of the world, you have to testify and validate, and you're responsible for it. So then, of course, there's other things, but we don't have time now. But it's important that we also start a discussion about these things, like, do we want sovereign software everywhere? Do we want it in strategic sectors? Do we want it only when it's a public administration that's using it? I mean, these are questions that have still to be discussed. And also, of course, we're not going to eliminate the non-European suppliers. And by the way, they're in Europe. They employ people in Europe. They do a good stuff. So they have good products. It's not like we want them to disappear. So is it fine to use them? When? And when it's not? And what about the data, which is the most important part? And then also, how can you define a company European? Because today, companies, especially, after they grow up beyond like 20 people, they are international usually. So they have investors from outside Europe. So is it about the shareholders, the management? And Christina Caffara's Eurostack has a good proposal on this. But we need to discuss this. So how do we get there? So how do we actually get to having a set of European alternatives, open source ones? So the second part of the presentation is about state intervention, since this was the subject also of the discussion at the plenary. And there are at least three possible models that can be used for state intervention supporting software development. One is direct development, meaning that usually the states, the public administrations have nowadays an in-house IT company. So they can just hire developers, develop software and provide it. And they usually pick a lot of open source software. They use it for free without giving back often. And then they release the software. Then there's the non-repayable grants model, in which basically the state gives out public money for free to people that develop software to support their work. And then generally the conditions that then software is, I mean, released under non-market condition, let's say. So open source is perfect for this. So then everybody can benefit from the investment that the public has made. And then there's the bi-European model, which is being advocated now, which is basically just using the existing IT spending by the public administrations to sustain the European industry. So just by buying European products instead of buying Microsoft and Google, the state can already sustain a lot of the private sector and give them the money that they need to invest, to make the products better, to grow, to scale up. And but this is still a market, so it doesn't really alter the market. I mean, there's still competition, there's still the advantages in terms of competition and new products and innovation. But there's a policy by the state that is promoting the spending in European products. And this is more or less the three different things. I mean, everybody's doing everything, but to simplify a bit, this is what I've seen in different countries. So the French model, but also the Italian model, seems to be a lot about doing directly, so having in-house companies. Well, the German model, I will explain it a little, I think it's more tending to the bi-European thing. And in the middle, we have this European Commission model. The European model is just about giving money for free. You know, Horizon projects, research projects. The problem is that we've been spending enormous amounts of money in Horizon projects or similar things in the last 30 years. And can you name a single dominant or successful internet company or product that came out of European research funding? I don't think there is one. So we are spending a lot of money in promoting the European tech industry, just not spending it in a good way that can alter the market. And while research is good, of course, but then if your problem is the market, then you should spend in a way that has effects on the market. Sorry. Also, the two different types of Eurostech. You might have heard about two different strands of work, I mean, about Eurostech. So one is the .info stuff, which is more like the German foundations trend, which is about funding. The .eu, which is Christina Caffara's website, it's more about, by European. So which of these three models is best? Well, all of them are best. I mean, they just have different use cases. And at the same time, if you use them in the wrong case, they can make disasters. So it's not like we have to pick one. We have to use them well. So direct development is still good for stuff where you really, really want the public to control the code. I mean, like identity, like the public login systems or eIDAS implementations, like maybe the taxes platform. So in some cases, you really want to have a public administration controlling everything. And that's fine. The grants model is fine, especially for the nonprofit part of the community, the volunteers. I mean, there's a lot of people that need money to maintain important projects that are underfunded because they are done as a hobby. They're not their main job. And still, these are libraries that are everywhere. So if you look at the main security issues we've had in the open source software in the last decades, these were voluntary projects where people didn't have the time and money to do proper security fixes. So this is where the state could, I mean, successfully put money. So if the state could fund penetration tests for non-profit open source projects, or just the work to implement new security or whatever. I mean, there's some basic, whether it's Linux, whether it's some basic open source libraries, there is stuff that is just useful to everyone, but the users are so, I mean, there are too many, so nobody really cares because they think that someone else will pay for it. And this is what we have to stop. And then there's the bi-European. The bi-European is basically, I think, 90% of the thing. I mean, because whenever possible, we should still be encouraging people to innovate, and create jobs and fund companies. And so I think that most of software will still fall into the bi-European category. The problem is that, I mean, if you have a look at how the open source development model is and then the value chain, it's really, really interconnected. So it's not like there are separate entities. So you have a lot of non-profit development, a lot of commercial development in Europe, and then they directly provide stuff to the public or private customers, but also they provide it to the public IT developers that then sell it to the public. So the problem that we have to solve is that the flow of money, the funding, should follow the value chain. While today, a lot of it is like this. So you have volunteer developers that don't get any money, but still do their job as volunteers. And then you have the public, 99% of the money is not in this slide, it goes everywhere, I mean, elsewhere to proprietary software makers. But the tiny bit that goes to open source products, it's split between public software users buying stuff from their own in-house companies and buying it from commercial developers. And this creates, by the way, direct competition between the commercial open source developers and the public IT companies, which is totally unhealthy because we have to be allied and working together to overcome the problem that 99% is spent on American proprietary software. And so having the competition for the remaining 1% is really doesn't make any sense. So I would like to see something like this. So the encouragement is that we have to match all the flows of value. So we have to work together in a way. We have to find a way so that the public money starts cycles where the money goes everywhere and flows in the end to anyone who is writing useful software. So this is really the objective that we should have in terms of contractual architectures. Then, of course, in some cases it will be people buying, so contracts. In other cases it will be grants, as we said. But still money should flow to everyone. So this is, I think, the right thing in the German model. The German model, sorry for coming to Paris and praising the German model. But the German model is fine because they actually started, maybe it's better if I show this slide. So the architecture of the German model is that the state owns a 100% public in-house IT company, but the IT company is not developing stuff. It's actually mostly just going to the vendors and saying, okay, I need this. They give requirements. They maybe fund some development, they buy whatever they need to buy, and they get it back, and then they sell it to public administrations. And this is creating this kind of flow, direct money flow between the public IT companies, the public buyers, and the companies, and then, of course, also some of the non-profit people that, in turn, can be funded. So, in the end, my last minute and a half is about why do we buy European? So, are we really, we should all be convinced that we need to buy European. But why? Well, the point is really that we don't lack public money. We say, we cannot compete with Americans or the Chinese because we're poor, we don't have money, there's no investment. It's true. In Europe, there's 1/20th of the venture capital amount that there is in the US. So, it's very hard to get investment in a way. But we have money. We're not a poor part of the world. The problem is that we cannot. We don't spend it well. We won't spend it in a focused way to promote the European alternatives. And I like to show this. This is sort of an attempt to show the scale of different numbers. So the big pink box is the market capitalization of Apple, which is, it's a market cap, but still it's an economic amount of power that, 4 trillion euros, more or less, or something like that they can spend, in a way use it to dominate the world, to buy whatever is doing competition, to buy politicians, to buy media. We've been sort of fighting them, at least in Brussels, with the Horizon Europe Fund, which is the little blue box. And so you just see the difference in amount of money. Even By the way, the part of Horizon Europe going to software is like 1,000th. But even if all our research money were spent to counter just Apple, we would be at a big disadvantage. On the other hand, the public spending by the European Union is the bigger green box. And so that's a much bigger amount of money. So if you can orient that money, the effect will be much higher than any kind of research or grant or whatever public funding. So that's what we really need to do. We can spend our money to reinforce our dependency, public money, or we can spend it to promote the alternatives. Thank you. Yes, I... Well, yeah, okay, because the problem is that open source generally is at least as secure as proprietary software, usually better, but the certification problem is a problem. So that's also something where the public money could go. So as I said, there should be some money to which the public sector helps in getting certifications when needed, because of course, especially the non-profit part, we are a for-profit company, so we can spend some money to get certified, whatever it is, we are certified, but the non-profit part of the it needs to be subsidized for this. And this is still an open project, an open problem, I'd say. To be honest, this was also the subject of a battle, for example, at the Cyber Resilience Act. So we, because again, the Cyber Resilience Act says that you can have open source software at a certain conditions, but not get in the CE mark. So we don't want open source to be perceived as an inferior alternative to proprietary software. It's actually as good or better, even in terms of security. But I agree that there's still some effort to be made. But this is a good request you could make to the French government. So I don't know. Petr is supposed to moderate the session, but so I'm happy to give you the floor. I mean, let's self-manage, but
yeah. Okay, I'm supposed to chair my own session, actually. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.